and it went like.
Hi everybody, this is Betty Toledo. We are here with Buas Games Grind Set, and today I have the lovely Silke with me. Silke, I am famous for butchering surnames, so I gave up on that endeavor.
I would have a good one though. So the surname is Hassreiter.
Yeah.
And I'm way friendlier for all the Germans that listen. I'm way friendlier than my name says about me. So I swear.
So Silke, please introduce yourself.
Yeah. So we stick to Silke.
Yeah. And exactly. I can say, now I realize, yeah, I can speak German. So I can say Hassreiter.
Yeah. See, but there you go. Even better than I do.
Go for it.
Yes. So my name's Silke and I work for the research department together with the professor, Dr. Mata Haggis. So I would like to use the doctor because he does not use it himself. So I like to use it.
Yeah, and he was a guest last week. So.
Exactly. And I'm sure he did not use it, but I like to use it. He worked hard for it. No, I'm one of his researchers. So I work together with him and I've been working on one project that's called Panorama for the last 1.5 years and still busy with it for the next 1.5 years. And we look actually into the connection between the industry and education and everything that fits and does not yet fit and where we can actually things improve.
And what was your experience before coming here, Silke?
Before coming to you?
Yeah.
I was extremely nervous because I've worked in the media and I've never done a podcast before. So I'm blushing at the moment for the ones that do not see it.
Well, before coming to Buas, what
before did you coming, do? Oh, before coming to Buas. Yeah, indeed. So then I worked for the media. So I was a camera operator, one of two in Germany by then. So it was the 90s and early 2000s.
Nice.
Yes. So it was a very men-dominated field, which is something that I can relate to now also a lot when I talk to people in the industry, especially women in the industry, because I have the feeling what I experienced in the 90s and 2000s as one of few in a very man-dominated field. I hear still a lot. But I hear also the improvement. So it's quite nice.
Quite a lot, yeah.
Yes, so it's quite nice to hear similar stories, but then a few years later.
Nice.
Yeah.
And why this project? Why Panorama?
It was, to be very honest, a wonderful introduction for me to the game world because my background is in camera operation. And when I started working for Mata, then he said, oh, I have this wonderful project for you because like that, you can get to know the field better than anyone else actually in that moment.
True.
Because you get to talk to all these studios, to all these professionals, young talents, students, educators, and you can just simply ask them what's going on at the moment. And that is just perfect. I like asking questions. So now it's a bit the other way around. And I can just simply ask open questions and let them tell me what's going on. So it was the perfect step into the game world for me.
So we're going to go deeper in this because the project is extremely interesting. But in elevator pitch, what is the Panorama project? What are you looking for?
Yeah. So the Panorama project is studios throughout Europe. It's animation studios, it's game studios, it's VFX studios, and education institutions. And they together decided we should actually systematically look once together into the status quo and have a look where we match and where we not match. We do that a lot already in all kind of personal conversations, but we have never done it actually in a way that research really looked at it and just mapped it out. And obviously what I'm doing is not complete. But the idea is that we as Panorama map out the first overview and give it back to the industry as well as to education institutions to have a start to talk and say, wow, I have a similar experience, or oh, this is what you're doing, how interesting, and then build up. So it's not meant to be a once-off project, it's actually meant as a conversation starter, because we understand in that industry what I find out a year ago is already way evolved now. So this is also important. It's one snippet, and it should be something that engages conversations.
But the part, that snippet that I wanted to talk to you, that there is a specific snippet that actually there, we have a book here in Buas that is circulating that is super cool, and I think it's very pertinent and very important to a lot of the people in the games industry and trying to get in, which was the study that you did about what companies are looking for in professionals when they are hiring, what are the processes, like all the, so I really want, like, I know we can do 300 podcasts. Everybody I bring here, we have so much to talk that we could do several series of the podcast. But today, I wanted very much to focus on this because I think with the uncertainties in the industry, it becomes a question that everybody is asking on, what do I need to know and what do I need to have?
Yeah.
Or who do I need to be?
Yeah.
Which is the question that nobody asks, but you will describe that a little bit better to actually get my dream job.
Yeah.
So can you talk to us about this snippet specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. I could talk for hours, so I try to limit myself to the actually, I think, most important points. Indeed. So we started also asking with, what do the students need to be able to do? But we realized also very, very quickly, you're absolutely right, it turned very fast into discussion about who they have to be. Because we've seen a trend in the industry, so it's not everywhere, but we've seen that several studios start like changing their ways of working, their work dynamics a little bit, and they move away from the typical rock star employee. So everyone's very grateful and still admiring these very hardworking, excellently skilled people that have started off that industry and that have made the industry the way that it is now. But they've seen as well that many of them have difficulties adapting and adapting especially to group work, that they would rather work on their own and be brilliant on their own. And they do that and they also very much need it still. But we see that there's a trend towards a lot more group work. And that is directly linked to what I've heard from many, many studios say, we actually do need an adaptable team worker. So we would like to have someone that knows their way around with others in a pipeline, that can talk the same language, that can communicate, they can talk with different cultures, they can talk within a hierarchy, they can have different communication skills in small studios as well as in big studios, which is completely different again. So someone has to be very versatile, has to be able to adapt to any culture, any situation. They have to speak best perfectly English. That is one thing that came over and over again. I said, it's an international business. It doesn't matter if you work in France, if you work in Germany, if you work in the Netherlands or anywhere in the world, many, many of the productions and the teams, they do communicate in English with each other. Which leads me to the next thing, being adaptable in terms of moving. And I see you're like, oh my God, Selke, don't say everything. I stop now.
No, that's that. It's, that. It's a lot.
And, yes.
And I find it funny that like the thing I wanted to comment is, from one side they are saying, we don't want the rock stars, but then they put a list of requirements, which is the list of requirements of a rock star, maybe not in the experience, but then also you see the job applications, like the requirements, they are still asking the person that does all that that you said, plus 5 years experience, I don't know how many games released. And so I'm really curious. We're going to talk about the discrepancy, but I wanted to focus on what you're saying now and saying from the point of view of the communication, it's very natural that there is this shift in the industry. First, because toxicity and, yes, and company culture has been up in the conversation for a while now. So then the communication, yes, fits quite well with that. But also because when the games industry started, it was built by people that never built games before. Mm-hmm. And they were really good in what they were doing, yes, and very creative. So everything else...
And very hardworking.
Yeah. And everything else didn't really matter. Yeah. If you see the first people in IT, they were not necessarily the best people as a people. Like, right. You see, like, you have good people and you have...
Yeah.
Yeah, like the... Being likable, being, you know, it wasn't the thing.
Yeah.
It was creating something new, right? And the shift in this narrative is very from your talk with the companies. Did they tell you why the shift on the company on the narrative of what they are looking for?
Yeah, I think especially because they realized that it is becoming more and more team effort. The productions are becoming bigger, so it's not a thing anymore that you do by yourself or with two or three friends in a garage an amazing game. Yeah, it still happens, right? So you know more about that than I. But when you look into the bigger studios, or even into indie game development, it is really a team effort. effort. People have to learn to work together. Plus, they look into a lot more sustainability. So they don't want to burn the good people out within a few years. They actually want to grow with the people. They want to give them the possibility to adapt again with the developments, technological developments, the market trends, anything that's around. So they don't want to lose the people just because they cannot work anymore because they fall out the system. So there is this term sustainability in the workforce that is very big. But I want to also emphasize it is not yet everywhere. So I heard other stories as well. And I definitely heard from educational institutions that I talked to, like what you said as well, there is still a lot of companies that ask for the highly skilled compliant. So not the one that wants to have a 9-to-5 job or that says, I have a work-life balance and I want to take care of me. So there's also companies that very clearly indicate to education institutions, we want the hard workers, we want the rock stars, but they must not have an ego. So come in without the ego.
Yeah, rock stars without ego. That, like that exists, right?
Indeed. So actually, I think I summed it up once, or someone, not even I, now I'm taking credits for something. Someone summed it up, I think it was a student that said to me, so what they want now is a rock star that plays in a band. And I had to laugh so much. I was like, yeah, actually, I think that's...
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. But I wanted to go further on that because I stopped you on the list.
No, so there was a list of 10 points. I don't know them now all by heart. The nice thing is we do have also an online report out there where you can read all the details with all the different quotes that we collected along the way. But what I remember now is things like communication was very big. Cultural competency was very, very big.
What do they call cultural competency? Because I think for a lot of people, this is a term that they are not used to.
Yes. So it is very simple, work with different people from different cultures. Very simple, one thing. Yeah. Another thing was being aware of when you work with different cultures that if you call something, we're gonna create a school. Yeah, so we have an environment and there's a school. That when you talk from someone from India, a school is completely different than someone in the UK or someone in the US. So very simple concepts that we think are very clear to us, or marriage or anything else, they are with international colleagues something completely different. So there can be a lot of miscommunication.
It's almost like a cultural sensitivity kind of point of view, right?
Yes, being aware of it. And we all make mistakes still. You know, like we think we're very open, perhaps. I mean, I always consider myself a very open person. However, every day I run into my limitations. But I think as long as I give the possibility to other people to tell me, oops, that was not the way I thought it was, then it helps at least for us both to learn. And I think that is also a very strong part of the requirements. So to be open to that, which is also leading to creativity, because if you can actually harvest that skill for creativity and putting that into a game, for example, afterwards, you can actually make something nice out of it. So you just have to be aware of it.
Yeah, the good thing is that a lot of the things that you're saying is also connected with the research that Mata talked before, because we talked about the diversity in the games industry, and that's very connected.
Yes.
One thing that you were talking about communication and got stuck in my head is I find it difficult that a lot of creativity and neurodiversity are hand to hand.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's very connected. Are one of those things. And for neurodiverse, and bear in mind, I'm being very generic. It's a spectrum, and it can be, for some people might be a lot harder, for others might be a lot easier. But I always wonder all these requirements in communication, how difficult it makes for some people that are extremely talented and really capable of doing their work, but then they are not maybe as extroverts or they have more difficulty communicating with others. Did they comment something on that?
A lot. So I fortunately heard from some studios that they understand that in the meanwhile. They say amazing people are out there that we just never hear because they are not that good in self-promotion. They are not as good in selling themselves. In an interview, they're perhaps rather silent, but they have amazing portfolios. They are wonderful working in a team, in a smaller team, but they're just nervous and they cannot really sell themselves. So they're a lot more sensitive to that.
Oh, that's good, yes.
However, which brings me to the point actually that you said before, in the end, to get in is the difficulty. So we said there as well, so they would like to have this adaptable team player. Humble was also one of the things. Humble, adaptable, and team player. At the same time, when I talked to the people then, to the participants, and I said, look, so when you look for these humble, adaptable team players, how do you do that? So how does this selection process look like? And then all of a sudden it changed entirely. And we found out that, yes, in the moment that you shake the hand of the interviewer, you are supposed to be that humble, adaptable team player. So you should show that side of yourself. But the but in order to get that interview, you have to be a completely different person.
Yeah, a cocky salesperson that knows how to sell. Yeah.
Yes, that's what you said. That's what you said. We call that an extremely highly skilled, strong self-promoter that's extremely self-confident and very much out there and can promote themselves. Extremely good in networking. And that very often, when you look just into the personality types of the people, I mean, you see them every day, amazing artists, amazing programmers. And then you hear this requirement that's not in the job description. That's just simply that overly saturated job market requires, because there are so many. So the ones that scream the loudest, the ones that have the best portfolio, the ones that are the most extrovert, that go to the most networking sessions, that do the best networking, that are the loudest, et cetera, et cetera. They are the ones that are seen. And that is where also the industry professionals that I talk to, they really say that is unfortunately still the reality.
I have a question though, because I read the whole research and there were certain things. Well, I read the whole research, but that part might have escaped me, which is when you were doing the research and collecting the data, did you talk only with the people that were the hiring decisions, or did you talk also with the teams that, like the program leads or the art leads on the, how was the distribution for you when you were choosing the people?
We had everyone. So we had HR professionals, so really the ones that pre-select or that say, okay, together with a team of the hiring team that select, and they really look also then into the onboarding. Mm-hmm. But we also talked to any professional that is in a leading position, be it now art, be it programming, a technical lead. So we had a quite big mix, also smaller studios as well as bigger studios. And the interesting thing was that there was a lot of similarity. Obviously, it is not generalizable because we did not do a quantitative study. We really did a qualitative study, so we talked to individuals. But it was interesting to see when we went to FMX in Germany or to Annecy, and it was for animation, and we presented our findings. We only saw nodding faces. Students, educational institutions like teachers and directors, also studios, so any professionals, junior as well as senior, they were like, oh my God, yes, that is how it looks like at the moment. This is the dilemma that we're in.
Yeah, because I thought it was interesting because usually the programmers, for example, I would use programmers as example because I think there are quite a lot of introverts among programmers. It's the nature of the job. Mm-hmm. They have to really dig deep into what they're doing. I would imagine that the leaders in the programming department would have a softer look at the candidates than, for example, the hiring director or the CEO of the company. Did you feel that there was that, or is it normalized?
Yeah, and they say as soon as they're in. So if you can get in via, so for example, via your student network, that you have perhaps, that you're perhaps lucky that you have a programmer friend that knows how hard you work, how wonderfully you work already in your student projects. And they get a job perhaps because they're more extrovert, they're better in networking, or they also know someone. And they can then point out that, hey, I have this amazing colleague from university and he needs a job at the moment, or he's been looking for a job. Can you please meet him? Then definitely there is an easier way in for someone that struggles more with networking and putting themselves out there than someone that really has to go via the traditional way of putting their application in, which then has a complete different kind of set of hurdles to get there. But the via recommendations also for a student network, which is very, very important, which I understand now as well, the peer network that you make now at school already at university. It's also for the more, I call them now silent talents, easier to get an amazing job. And as soon as they are in, That's what everyone says. And you do a good job, people like you, and you just function wonderfully in the team, then it's easier because then recommendations kick in.
The funny part is that it also puts a pressure on educational institutions. Like here at BUAS, we are very connected on helping the students network. We have events that we're having everything procedural this week. And we do that quite often. And we bring the showcase industry, so industry showcase to bring the industry here. So we are really conscious on bringing the industry to the students. But this situation puts a pressure on all educational institutions. So we are lucky that we have already been doing that. But I imagine when you were talking to the institutions, it kind of made a light bulb for them that they really need to connect deeper with the industry for the sake of their future to begin with, right?
Absolutely. I saw that as well, that what the industry said, what happens a lot, especially with very, let's say, students that just started, right?
Yep.
They would like to already start a network, which is actually very important. So start early on networking. But they say they just often randomly reach out to people and therefore kind of pollute the inboxes of these people, which leads then to the situation where these professionals say, I cannot answer all of them. So I just stop answering them. So they said it would be so nice if students definitely do networking, but if they would do a more selected networking. So this is what I would like to be in this moment. Everyone perhaps changes along the way a little bit in which part of the industry you want to end up, but that you find the key people in that area and connect with them in a very meaningful way. Hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. This is who I want to be. I admire you because can you help me out in whatever specific way? And like that, this pollution of random kind of networking requests is hopefully, in the perfect world, getting less, and it can be a lot more meaningful connection. So that's what I heard over and over again. I would love to help young students, young talents, but I don't have that much time, as we all know in the industry. But if I hear there is someone out there that sounds like they're young me, and now I have the possibility to help them, I would love to. But I cannot look through 200, 300 requests.
And that's why things like the portfolio day that we do, that are super important.
Yes.
Because people already come here with that mindset of, I'm going to look at work and I'm going to give them feedback. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you, are there, like, you looked at a lot of things. I imagine there were certain red flags in the games industry that you saw and you went, we really need to work on those.
Yeah.
We all know, like, we're not sensitive. We know, games industry knows that they have problems. Well, what are the biggest red flags that you saw from Panorama so far?
I think, I don't even know if it's a red flag, because I think exactly what you said, everyone's aware of it, right? And it is a problem that hardly anyone could tell me how to solve it. And that's just simply work-life balance, the idea of not burning out talents along the way. So together with this adaptable teamwork was the idea of a balanced work-life balance, of a more healthy work-life balance, which should already be in university. So we should already bring this awareness to our students. When I looked now at the students and I talked to them, and that was quite interesting to ask them about the work-life balance. And they told me, Naya, Silke, you have to make a choice. And I said, what do you mean? They said, either you want to get a job afterwards and you have to have this excellent portfolio. You have to do all the networking. You have to do all the group work. So you have to be the really good team player. So like what we said, adaptable team player, plus having this extreme good portfolio. And you have to also do networking already. So when I do all of that, I'm way, way, way ahead of 40 hours per week. So now I have to make a choice. Do I power through for 4 years, hope I do not die and crash, and then hopefully get a job? Or do I perhaps say, okay, I'm going to work only from, I don't know, from 9 till 9 perhaps, and do a job next to it, try to be a tween in this case and try to live a little bit, and then perhaps not get my dream job. And I saw people with a lot of ambitions that said, but I came here and I want to give everything. I want to be that person out there in the industry. So I rather sacrifice my work-life balance and I push through. And I heard from young talents, and that's the interesting part, that say, in my first or second year in the job, I said, wow, how relaxing is that job in comparison to my studies?
That's interesting.
Yes, and that shocked me big time because we know how stressful the actual job is.
But the funny part is that, and Dizika, we did that in AI, but I think it's interesting. There was a research here at Bulls, but it wasn't in the games. It was in AI and data science that they actually asked the students. First, they asked the students, do you feel that you're overworked? They all said, yes, we're deeply overworked. And they asked how many hours per week you're actually working. And their answer was between 25 and 28. So I always wonder also the balance between the perception and also the self-pressure, because I hear from my teachers as well that a lot of the times they are saying, this is good, you're good, go, and they are, and the mm-hmm. students are like, no, yes. It has to be better.
Yes.
No, it has to be better. It has to, like, yes. it's a lot of the self-inflicting
yes.
levels of quality and deadline bear in mind here where I didn't do the research. I'm just like, I have just experienced enough yes. in the industry to see. I think a lot of things are work and life balance in the companies, but I think when it comes with the students, it's a lot of self-inflicted high standards
yes.
that they are very scared to put lower.
Yeah, I think that's exactly a big part of it. I cannot judge in terms of what or if that self-inflicted challenge or this higher goal that they have, if that actually matches their actual requirements, right? So that one is difficult for me to say, but you're absolutely
and
right.
And it will vary from company
absolutely.
To company as
indeed,
well. Yeah.
Indeed, very big differences. But I think what I understood is when the students come from high school where they've always been the best in drawing and programming or whatever, so all of a sudden they come, for example, to us and then they're all the bests of high school. And all of a sudden when I'm drawing and I was always celebrated for drawing, I look at the other one's drawing and I'm like, oh my God, they're so much better. And that's what I've heard over and over again, this kind of reality check that they get as soon as they come here. And they realize, oh my God, I'm not the best anymore. Yep. And then it depends, I think, a lot on the personality. Do I get then driven to work harder and harder and harder? Plus they hear obviously as well, how competitive the job market is. So I think all these influences, that's what the students told me, brings them to the point of making the choice of, do I give my everything and I just get hopefully out there with the best recommendations of my lecturers, that I'm hardworking, that I'm a good team worker. Do I have a really good portfolio that exceeds the group work? That's also important. So I do some stuff on the side, which yep. costs time. And do I network as well? So am I present in this online and offline networking events beyond school as well? So they told me, one person told me a list what they are doing. And I'm like, okay, if you only spend an hour on all of that every day, every week, then the 40 hours are full. But you do way more than an hour on every point of your list. And they said, yes, thank God, I love it. And I was like, okay, this is an interesting one. And I was just thinking about an important one. Yeah, but at the same time, and I think that's what you also hear, there is a lot more awareness also now with the students about their health and their work-life balance. So there is this awareness, which with some students, what they told me is, they say, we know that our lecturers tell us to work less, to it's enough. So they hear it. But they see it as a kind of to-do, or not everyone, the ones that I talk to,
yep.
many of them, they see it as a kind of a to-do list as well. So one quote that I quote over and over again was one student said, I have to be relaxed. So every time when a lecturer comes in and I'm totally stressed out, I haven't slept for 2 days, I'm going to jump into a yoga pose just to seem relaxed, to fulfill that criteria as well.
That's so funny. So they are not doing for themselves anymore. They're, that became a prerequirement
yes,
as well.
Oh, as God. Well. And that is where it becomes so complicated, you know?
But also on the injury, what you were saying about the things that need, I wonder also, if people will read the interview, professionals and students, because also we're talking now about students, but professionals have exactly the same problem that they get when you are a young professional in a company and you just got the job. You are so scared. You want to get that. You want to keep that job, right? Yes. You have that time where your contract is not permanent yet, or you maybe you work in a company that never will give you permanent. Yes. And you are constantly chasing that quality. And I always wonder, how can we better balance that such a study will help people have the dialogue and get better and not have the effect of saying, oh, okay, so now I'm gonna do theater and I will learn how to sell myself. And then afterwards, I go back to my oyster because I hate doing that. Like it.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting, like, I wanted to ask from, because now I'm talking too much.
No, never. We said it's a conversation, see?
from the professionals, the ones that are already in the company, did they feel that they had to do the same thing, or did it shift in the last years? Because I always wondered, was it always like that, or did it get worse in the last years? Yeah.
Difficult to say from that, because it's really anecdotal. So it's really, but the feeling that I get, and it's really a feeling, the feeling that I get is there is still, as an outsider looking at it, especially the staff that's been there for longer, there is a lot of, I would call it trauma bonding. So a lot of stories about how hard it was, how proud the people are to have survived that, and that almost
survived the job application. Wow.
Exactly. Survived the university, survived always being the best, always being faster, always worked harder, slept less, ate less. The stories are so actually self-destructive when you think about it, what happened. But because so many people went through it, it kind of binds them together. And this is something where you hear from some, I hope that the younger ones do not have to go through it. But others say, I went through it, I survived, so I expect the same from the next generation. All mixed signals out there. So it's so difficult to say what you said in the beginning. What shall we do? Because education gets these mixed signals.
And in all fairness, my experience in the games industry is that the great majority, the very great majority, they say they want the work-life balance. They say they want the best qualities. But in the end, they expect, because it's connected with something that we talked to Martha before, which is bias. Mm-hmm. We do have personal bias. And if you were brought up in an environment where you are working hard, you're valued by that, and you suck it up and push it through, and it's usually that generation, my generation and the generation after my, like, I am old, bear in mind, but we are the generation hiring.
Yeah.
It's the people over 35, 40 and above, right? And it's quite hard to not reflect that on the process. And I felt that the research pretty much showed that.
Yeah, as well. Yeah.
That it's a generational thing that we are carrying on.
Yeah.
And then the question that remains is, will the next generation change it or carry on with that?
That is a wonderful question, because that boiled down to a ethical discussion that I heard about in education. Because who are the educators now as well? They are also the people that have been socialized in the previous version, I call it now carefully, of the industry, the hard workers, the perhaps former rock stars, you know, that say, okay, I'm tired of it, I've done enough, now I want to like help raise the next generation. But then you have also younger ones in there. They perhaps think a lot more about the health, the healthy work-life balance. So the idea that, or the discussions, which the participants called an ethical discussion of, what do we do? Do we prepare this next generation of students for instant placement? So super portfolio, help them networking as much as possible, put them out there, help them and put them all the golden bladder basically to the industry. But tell them, perhaps in the beginning you want to be more compliant than anything to stay there as well. Or do we put that seed into them to say, take care of yourself, be a better leader out there. Change slowly. I know in a junior position you cannot do it. We cannot put it on the shoulders of juniors to change the industry. But shall we plant that seed in them? And if we have planted that seed in them, will it die out there in the industry, or will they be able to blossom it? So we don't know.
I think it's a mix of both. Sorry. Yeah. So from one point of view, I think as education, we have the obligation to help our students get jobs. They don't come here to spend 4 years, 5 years, if they do masters of their life, going, yay, and then afterwards go, I will flip burgers or McDonald's. That's not the point. But I think we have been in the games industry quite successful from changing things from within. It was one of the reasons why I chose go back to education, because I noticed that it's easier to give the right information to young people and then see them changing the next generation of games industry than to try to change the mindset of the people that have already been working in the industry for 20 years, right? But it is the seed, because the truth is if we create a generation of rebellious people, unless they all become entrepreneurs and create a new layer of companies, which would be awesome too. I'm not saying no to that. But it means if they want to get to the bigger companies, they will have to be the secret agent, infiltrate the right way, and then change it from inside, right?
Yeah. And I hear as well, it's always interesting when I hear you talk again, and I remember, and these voices in my head that I collected start talking. And I just remember that someone from HR, it was a French big studio, that said as well, says, indeed, the requests have already changed. So there is a different discussion now in the application conversations, especially when it goes towards the contract. There's different kind of requests already. Careful, because they still are happy to come and being hired, but there is definitely there is a list now, yeah, of things that they also want to take the job. And that was something that they found actually positive as well, because it is in line with what they want to do as well. So it is not completely out of their ideas.
It is not a revolution.
No, it's not a revolution. But she says it is definitely something that does not only come from them, that they say we would like to have a lot more team players, but we see already that we have to give them as well something. So we cannot just say you have to be now everything and, I don't know, Superman and Superwoman here, but we also have to give. And they don't know yet how exactly. And that's an interesting point too. Many studios say they want to look into leadership now, because a lot of the senior talents, which go because of excellent performance into leadership positions, not necessarily are trained as leaders with industry-specific skills, because it's not like the same as a leader in a bank, for example. So you need very specific skills in that position. But they just got there because they are so good in what they do.
Or they have been long enough in the company.
Exactly.
It's the biggest problem is when leaders are chosen because of seniority. That should be completely banned.
Yeah, it's not what gives them the leadership qualities.
Yep.
So I heard that there is also something that there is this a need that the companies see now to send existing leaders, so the ones that are currently in the positions, to specific management and leadership courses and say, we need to change from actually within. Because if we have leaders with the same mindset, trying to socialize the newer generation into that hardworking, not complaining, living in the studio mindset, and then just, you know, burning them out, but in the worst case along the way, that's not anymore what we want. We want an in-between.
And it's expensive.
As well, indeed. A new generation of talents come, and it has a different idea about work as well. It's not extreme yet, but the first ideas are there in terms of work-life balance. And I think that's an interesting one, how everyone in this ecosystem tries to to go towards that ideal. Not Different everyone, ways. Sorry, many, not yeah. everyone. I want to immediately say not everyone, but the exact most. Indeed, some. No, there's many that I talked to, let's say like that, yeah. that said, and many that heard of it that say, yes, we are the same. But there is definitely a trial and error phase at the moment. How far in this people-centered leadership skill forks, a leadership style, can we go? Because I've heard also from companies that went, which they said, too far into it. And then all of a sudden, the management league was management team was overworking because they let their staff go early enough, but the stuff had to be done because the deadline's there.
Yep.
So it is a trying out and seeing, okay, it's so new, it's so fast, and how old is the industry? It's not old. It's not an grown industry like the film industry. We have to find our way.
It is old, but it's not knowingly old.
No.
Like But I think the biggest problem as well, there are a lot of biggest problems. Like one of the problems as well they have is the fact that the deadlines and the are not provided by the development team.
Yes.
They come from other teams that are not involved in that. So in a big company, you also have structure. It's a deadline is pushed by marketing because the competitor is releasing a game on the same day. And then there are the investors that expect the money on the release in a certain time so they can get the money back, or the publisher. Like there are layers of it.
Yes.
So I think proper change, like deep change, will take time, just because we have to change these layers. We have to change the way we are doing things that way. And we have to think that the problems that you were talking about in games, not only in games, in IT in general has the same problem. And IT has been around even longer as well.
Yeah.
So it is thing.
And that at the same time, while technology is not waiting.
Oh, it's fast.
Exactly, it's fast. Yeah. So you are finally having the feeling, what I've heard, oh, we've got it now. Our pipeline is good. The people are there. And then, oh no.
Flip.
Exactly. Everything changes. Let's retrain our team, or hope they retrain themselves. Let's put different structures in place. That all happens while there are productions ongoing. So it's not that a big company stops all of a sudden and thinks about, oh, how do we do it now differently because there are these changes. No, they have to run and they have to try to implement on the go. And that is also something which puts extra pressure. And that is time, that is what I heard, hardly scheduled in. It's just expected someone to be done.
We need to close now, but I wanted to ask if you would give one last tip for the people. I want to talk especially for the people that either are students or people that got laid off and are trying to get a job, or are just trying to get their first job, graduated and are fresh together. What would be the advice that you would give them?
I think one, I not my advice, but the one that I like.
Yeah, exactly. And based on what you researched.
Exactly. Yeah. What I did like a lot, which came from the industry over and over again, one thing was, first of all, do not give up. That's number one. They know that it's hard when you get a rejection after rejection after rejection, because that's just how the industry works. But they also said, like, just don't give up. Try to stay, like, develop yourself further, do online courses, do anything that you can do to stay updated, even though the first applications do not go through. Connect to your peers from the university from a very, very early moment on, and build a strong network and promote each other. Promote each other in front of recruiters. That is something that I've heard that seems to be something that they like to hear a lot. So they say, okay, so what about you? Yeah, perhaps I'm already in a lucky position and I have a job, but I have that friend that's amazing. Let me connect you to them. So connect strong professional relationships from your first year on and stick to them, maintain them. Also something that they say very early on, understand the industry by yourself. Be curious what is out there. And also, even though you would have never thought that this is perhaps your career goal, look into the non-traditional industry. Look into other industry around the traditional game industry. Perhaps it is something for a side job. Perhaps it's your perfect job. Perhaps it's something that you can do while you're looking for the perfect job to gain experience. So these are the tips that I got from the from the industry over and over again. But the most important thing that they said was just be a really nice person, because they have a policy. Am I allowed to swear here?
Yes, I'm good.
Because they say they have a no asshole hiring policy. They
said an asshole is not a swear word. Go for it.
That's good. I'm careful with that. So they said, just don't be an asshole. Come in here and be friendly. You might be not the biggest talker, but when you're here, we can sense that you're a good person and you're fit for the team. And I think it doesn't matter how disappointed you are and how hurt you are along the way. The moment you get the chance, show them what a wonderful person you are and that you fit into that team.
Those are really good advices. I should finish it, but I wanted to add just one thing. If you're having difficulty networking, check out, there are several associations around the world, like IGDA and local associations that have mentorship programs that you can actually go and connect with people in the industry. Because when the people in the industry, I am one of those that do that, want to mentor others, organize ways to do that is to connect through an association. So you can organize your time in a way that it doesn't overwhelm you. And events. Talk to people on events, show things out like as much as possible. Really, really put your stuff out there. Don't be afraid of feedback. It's really cool. But Silke, thank you very much.
Thank you, Patty.
This was lovely. And we surely have to do. I know that Panorama is still ongoing.
Yes.
So let's do another one when you're closer to the end
so
we can see where things are going. There isn't a year and a half yet. So.
Exactly. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And guys, I see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye. And then it went like...